All right, so we started the last 10 minutes last week, just to kind of start getting us thinking about it, asked the question, what's the primary function of a church leader? And I used the term church leader, the phrase church leader, to represent an elder, a shepherd, pastor, overseer, all the different names. So that's what I'm referring to.
Thank you, Dan.
All right, so we went through, I mean, like I said last week, that's as detailed a study as we'll ever do, at least that I'll ever lead in terms of publicly in a class setting, going the way we went through all the names and the meanings of the names and all that. It won't get any deeper than that. And the purpose of looking at all those names and going through it that way is to get us to the point where we can answer number one, what is the primary function? We're not talking about who is the shepherd, the elder, the overseer, the pastor. We'll look at that next, about who is that person. But what that person does, that's the question. So we've got this out there. And the reason it's so important to make sure that we address it publicly and not just, you know, behind the scenes, you might say, is because there's room for a lot of interpretation. And not, I'm not saying that all the interpretations will be accurate, but there's room for a lot of interpretation, and that creates disunity. Now, having said that, there is no way to expect everyone to agree on everything. It's just not ever going to happen. We're just too different. But like we tried to point out last week, when you've got such an important topic like that, we at least got to know where we stand on it. Because what will happen if you don't is you'll have one person thinking or having a set of expectations for the leaders, meaning they're supposed to do this, they're not supposed to do this, this is what they should spend their time on, and this is what they should focus on. Then you'll have, on the other spectrum, the other end, a person thinking, well, this is what they should be doing, this is what they should spend their time on, this is what they should focus on. And if those two things are very different, of course you're going to have conflict, or it could potentially lead to unhealthy conflict. What makes it even more difficult is if the elders, shepherds, pastors themselves are caught in the middle thinking, what are we supposed to do? And without having a conviction of their belief. So this, in a sense, has been to help them gather and acquire some conviction in their own beliefs in terms of what are they supposed to do? What is their function? What has God set in place for them to do and to be for the church relative to leading the church? So that's kind of the idea behind this, to just get us on the same page as best we're able. Now we got number one. What are the primary functions of the church leaders? Before we do that, look back up at the top. I just put those as reference points. That's basically a bullet point of what we just got done in that other sheet says. So that's just kind of a bullet point version of that other sheet. The number there, I just thought it would be interesting just to have it there for your reference. That's the number of times that word is used in the New Testament. So the overseer bishop word is used 13 times. The pastor shepherd word is used 41 times. The word elder is used 70 times. It's not necessarily in reference to the role. It's just that's how many times that word is used. So it kind of gives you an idea of what the writers were thinking. You know, how many times that they used it. Okay? All right, number one, what are the primary functions of the church leader? We can't answer that question without answering 2, 3, 4, and 5. So we're going to answer those first and then go back to number 1. And hopefully it'll answer itself and we'll just have it there in front of us. All right, number 2. The idea of an overseer. Pardon me just a second. Hang on just a second. I picked these up. I almost forgot. They were laying on the bench right at the right height for my kids. Okay. I had them in my pocket. I knew I felt. There you go. Sorry for interruption. I just didn't want to take this home with me. Or my kids do. All right, number 2. The idea of an overseer indicates a certain degree of authority. In terms of exercising oversight, what type of group are they to exercise over? Why does this matter, and how would it impact their role? So if they're supposed to oversee, if they're supposed to guard, who are they supposed to be guarding? What type of a group? What's the church, first of all?
All the church meeting one.
Okay. What type of a group is the church? How would you categorize that? In terms of an organization or a collection of people? Spiritual, right? As opposed to something else. Okay? I mean, it's kind of an obvious duh kind of question, but I ask it on purpose. Alright? We're a spiritual group. I mean, we're put together as a spiritual group. We're not put together for some other purposes. We are a spiritual group. That is our function. That is the foundation of who we are. Now, why would that matter in terms of what the function of the leader of the spiritual group is? If we're primarily a spiritual group, and that's kind of obvious. What is the leader of a primary spiritual group supposed to be focused on?
Spiritual leadership.
Okay. Now we're going to get tangible. So what should they not probably be focusing on?
Where we work, what we eat, what we drink.
Okay. Okay. Stuff like that. Okay. What else? In terms of when we're together. Does the building have a hole in the roof? Should that be the primary concern of the elders?
No.
Is the parking lot got enough parking lot spaces? No. I mean, what else is there? You see where I'm going with this. And it's an easy trap to get into, and it is a trap. Because as soon as the elders start focusing on things that aren't spiritually driven, that aren't spiritual things, they're diverted. Their attention is diverted. And the sheep aren't getting fed. Because if they're spending their time worrying about it, and that's something that we're actually dealing with right now, the size of the parking lot. And if the elders have to spend their time worrying about the size of the parking lot, they're not spending that time worrying about my soul, your soul, the feeding of your soul. So we're talking about the primary focus. So we have to go back and remember when we're talking about what's the elder supposed to do. Well, what does an elder do? What are they over? They're over a spiritual group. That matters. So their focus, their time, their energy, their resources should be spent on spiritual things. And it's just an easy correlation to make. So if their focus and their energy and resources are spent on spiritual things, they're not going to be spending much of it on this other stuff. And that's where deacons come in. So that's kind of how to differentiate from the elder to the deacon. Okay? All right, number three. What difference exists between these three titles? Are they equal? And the titles we're talking about, overseer, bishop, shepherd, pastor, and elder. What differences are there? Are they equal? What's that?
Yeah, they are
equal. Because it's the same role. And I asked that question just to highlight that point. It's the exact same role. The exact same role. There is no distinction. So when we refer to elder, we are talking about a shepherd. If we were to say pastor, we're talking about a bishop. It's the exact same role. Now here's where the rub comes in. Excuse me. It's different names for describing different functions. So if the biblical writer was wanting to highlight a specific point, he would use a different name. If he was just naturally referring to the title, that's why we have the word elder so common. So when you look at it, you got elder is the most commonly used one at 70, shepherd pastor 41, and the overseer bishop 13. Now you can kind of break it down and look at it from this point of view. Why was elder used so much more? Well, for whatever reason, it was the most common name, and that kind of trend has continued up in the church today. We generally speak of the elders. We don't usually use the phrase pastor or bishop or those others. We think elder first. The elder simply describes the person. That's all it does. The word elder. We've looked at it. It doesn't describe anything they do or don't do. It describes the person because it's all relative age based. It's relative to their age. So it just describes the person. But if the biblical writer is wanting to make a point about what the elder is supposed to do, they use the other two words, the functional words. The bishop or the overseer, which has the function of overseeing and guiding the flock. And then the shepherd, which is the function of the spiritual feeding of the flock. So it's the same word, it's just used in context differently. So if it's just a natural reference, so I just say elder. It's our group of elders. It's our presbyters. It's the presbytery. Those are all biblical names for it. And then if you're talking in terms of what the elders do, you might more naturally say, well, they're the overseers because they do the overseeing. Or they're the shepherds because you're focusing on saying, well, they're responsible for the spiritual feeding of the flock. Do you have a question or comment?
Well, I was going to say, when I was first baptized, I was told that the only shepherd was Jesus.
Say that. I didn't quite hear you.
The only shepherd was Jesus. That he was the only one that could have that title.
Okay. But why? Like, what was the... Oh, that's just what you were told? Okay. That's just what you were told? Well, I think that probably comes back to John 10.
Is that what it is?
Pardon?
I don't know.
I don't think it's accurate, if that's what you're asking.
I don't know.
Let's look at John chapter 10. That's a good question. Just turn over to John chapter 10. And I think probably that idea comes from this text. Where Jesus describes himself as the good shepherd. And I don't think the point of that text is to insinuate that Jesus is the only shepherd. The Ephesians 4:11 clearly says that God gave some as pastors. It's the same word. As pastor, shepherd, it's the exact same word. So when you look at John chapter 10, Jesus is just using an analogy of a shepherd to describe to those listeners who he was and to kind of get them to understand how much he loved them and cared for them. So to say that Jesus is the only shepherd, not really. The best one, the greatest one, certainly, but not the only, not in a literal sense. So, but good question.
How about deacons?
Pardon?
How about deacons?
We're going to get to deacons.
Okay.
You move faster than I am.
Okay.
We're going to get to deacons. So let's go to number four. We'll try to get through this tonight. We might make it. What do you think that? Why do you think the term elder is used so much more frequently? Is there a correlation between the amount it is used and the relative importance of the definition of an elder?
Because of the Old Testament, right?
Yeah, it probably had a lot to do with it. A lot to do with it. Because Jesus was the one who created the idea of a spiritual leader in terms of the shepherd. I mean, that was Jesus. As far as we know, no one else had really identified themselves as the spiritual shepherd of a group of people. That was Jesus doing that. So the New Testament writers, for the most part, were Jewish. And so their background was, remember, like we looked at in the Old Testament, it was the elders. And so that was just kind of what they were used to. That's a big part of why that name is used so frequently. Why do you suppose it's used most frequently in the past 2-3 generations?
Well, I mean, people in this country don't relate to shepherds. I mean, how many shepherds do you know?
Oh, practically?
Right.
One?
No. In a practical sense, in terms of agriculture, whatever, how many shepherds do you know? None.
Yeah. I mean, I know some farmers.
But bishop is a word that we've kind of related to the Catholicism.
Yeah.
So that you know.
So a lot of the Protestant people will avoid it, is what you're saying?
Pastor is kind of a word we've related to, the different...
My role.
Denominations kind of relate to the preacher's role.
Yeah.
And so, overseer, particularly now, not a good word, politically, not correct. So it comes down to elder.
So it's just Process of elimination.
Process of elimination.
Okay. What do y'all think of that? I mean, that's an interesting analysis. Does that sound...
One thing that's interesting is, back in that time, now we think of shepherds as Jesus in the white robe and the loving look at the lamb and all that. But man, back then, a shepherd was really about the lowest class of people, wasn't it?
It wasn't high, yeah. Yeah, it was a very dirty, dangerous, tough job.
They didn't wear white.
No, probably not. If they did, they didn't stay white. No. Yeah, it was a very dirty job. I mean, it was a farmer, you know.
People looked down on them, I mean.
Yeah, culturally speaking, it would have been.
The mothers would tell their kids, you know, don't hang around them shepherds over there. Would that kind of be the way it would be?
Yeah, yeah, probably. Probably. It would have been, it wasn't high on the totem pole of, you know, aspiring to be one. That's true.
Yeah, we had a country music song.
Yeah, I just thought of that too.
Mama don't think that they could be cowboys well then. It may have been.
That may have been true. But no, let's think, I mean, I think you guys are right. But let's think practically about it. And this is just my two cents. And this is all, this question is just purely speculation and opinion. No, there isn't. Let me answer it directly. What do you think about the term? Why do you think the term elder is used so much more frequently? Is there a correlation between the amount it is used and the relative importance of the definition of an elder? No. The second question, the answer is no. Definitely not. There is no greater importance relative to the other names of the church leader. It is not. Why is it used more frequently? I happen to agree with what Jim said. I think that going back, and this is history is all it is. It's history of the Restoration Movement. When the Restoration Movement started, in its essence and at its core, we were looking to separate ourselves from what was normal. That was the whole idea. And that's why they moved away from the Presbyterian faith, because it had become so highly structured. And so they wanted to get away from that. And that theme has carried on. So anything that represented itself as quote-unquote denominational or organizational or structural driven, we moved away from. So that automatically took out bishop. Now, and I mean, that's just, it's gone. The bishop overseer, or the bishop, the bishop overseer title is gone, because it's got that connotation of the Catholic-driven church, the Lutherans, and those type of things that, you know, obviously I disagree with. Then on top of it, the most common one has been pastor. And that's been the Protestant reference. I mean, that's been the Protestant term. And in my opinion, it's been misused. It's just not accurate to call the preacher a pastor, because he's not. And all of that stems from the Ephesians 4 text, where the two words are linked together, pastor and teacher. And it's the way it's worded in Greek that people get confused about. And because it's linked together, because if you look, go ahead and let's just talk about this for a moment. Turn to Ephesians 4, just so we can clarify this. At least you'll know where I stand on it. And if you disagree, that's fine, but at least you'll have some, you know, wider information. But if you look at Ephesians 4, look at 10, 11, and 12. I'm not going to get real technical, but I'll just kind of explain it as best I can without referring to the Greek words. So it says, and he gave some as. Okay, that's what we're looking at. Jim, go ahead and read that. Starting with, and he gave some as.
And he gave some as apostles, and some as prophets, some as evangelists, and some as pastors and teachers for the equipment of the saints for the work.
All right. Now you notice it's very technical and it's very detailed. But you notice how it says, and he gave some as. And he gave some as. And as. Now when you get to pastors and teachers, you see how they're connected differently? How it reads in English? Pastors and teachers. Like it's connected together. Because there's the confusion in the Greek language, the original language, that some people think that the grammar of the Greek language connects those two words together. And so the idea then is that he's talking about the teacher who pastors, the teacher who cares spiritually for the flock. Well, now bring that into our culture. Our elders, our elder board, as a common word for it in Protestant culture, is they don't teach. They're just an elder board. They're presbyters. Okay? They oversee. They're like the bishops. And so that, in people's mind, rules out them being pastors. Because their job is to oversee. They're not the teachers. You hire someone as the teacher. That teacher is called to come to your church and teach and pastor. So that's where it comes from. I think that's a misunderstanding, but that's where it comes from.
Now, some denominations still, among the Amish, okay, the Hutterites, if you're a bishop, you kind of sort of do the preaching.
Yeah.
But also, you can get far afield in terms of not being spiritual matters. I mean, they rule on whether, you can use a milking machine for a cow or have to milk it by hand.
Yeah.
These kind of things. So they're kind of a micromanager, which, Catholicism kind of got the same thing.
Yeah.
In certain things, what you can eat on certain days.
Yeah.
This type of thing.
Yeah. Well, that's true. And in many of the Protestant faiths, the elder board, the presbytery, same word, the presbytery has become or is seen as very much the cultural, a secular sense, the board of directors, like you have for a company. Each company has 12 board of directors, publicly traded companies, that is, has a board of directors. They'll have 10, 12, 14 who are paid to make decisions for the company. And they hire a leader for the company, and they oversee the leader. And they adjudicate how the basis of the company is going to be run. That's the same principle that many of the Protestant faiths have adopted, and that's why they hire the pastor, teacher, to come in and run the spiritual affairs of the church. And so they'll set guidelines, hierarchical guidelines, for the pastor, teacher to operate under as he guides and pastors the church. So that's the idea behind it. That's where it all came from and kind of how it functions today. So getting back to number four, why do you think the term elder is used so much more frequently? I ask that just to get you thinking about it. Because probably if you've attended a Church of Christ for the majority of your life, or at least a substantial portion of it, that's the term that you're most common with. And a lot of people are extremely uncomfortable with the others. They're not wrong. They're all biblical. And they're all the same. And that's why I've purposely tried to refer to our church leaders as shepherds. Because we have to, in a sense, do some redirecting of our mindset and course correct in terms of what are our shepherds supposed to be doing. Because in the past, so much of our shepherd's time has been spent legislating and decision making in terms of secular matters. And that's not the primary function. We are a spiritual group. So these group of men are leading a spiritual group. Common sense would tell us they're not supposed to be focusing on unspiritual things. So that's kind of the connection, and that's why I put that question in there. Okay, number five. Let me read it. Why are there three different names to describe the leaders of the church? We've already answered that. Because the descriptions and roles are different, how are we to know what the primary function of the church leader is? Is there a primary function? Okay, so that goes back to number one. Kind of asked that question twice. What are the primary functions of the church leaders? All right, so having said everything we said, okay, but before we answer that question, let me hit number six, because we're going to end it and wrap it up with number one. Is there any other questions that ought to be answered that haven't been asked relative to this discussion on the church leaders? Is there any questions that you have unanswered? Or that I may have presented that seem ambiguous in the way I presented information? Do you know why you believe what you believe about church leaders? That's the most important question. Okay? If you come up with one, let me know. That's fine. We can address it later. All right, so what is the primary function? What are the primary functions of the church leaders? Go ahead. You guys throw them out. What do you think?
Shepherd.
Okay. Elaborate. You just quoted one of their names. What does that mean? What are you saying?
The responsibility of supporting, feeding the flock spiritually and maybe physically.
Okay.
And protecting them from false doctrine or
Okay.
For lack of a better word.
Okay. That's all correct.
Whereas I see overseer more of being the, what we commonly would use the deacon's, describe a deacon's job as now.
Okay. Say it one more time, Mike, the last statement.
Overseer is probably what we would commonly describe as the responsibility of a deacon.
What do you mean?
Overseeing the building, overseeing the...
Oh, okay, okay. I disagree with you on that, and I'll clarify why in just a moment. Go ahead.
They are to spiritually serve the Lord's body. It all entails spiritually.
Okay, all right. I agree with that. I think that's correct. You said it well. What else? That's not all there is to it, though. Go ahead, George.
By nature, it makes it difficult for elders to help us spiritually, because we think if we're having a low time in our spirituality, it's difficult to talk to anyone about it. But it's also difficult for the elder to think to see someone suffering in their spiritual walk and get that person to open up and talk to them about it.
Okay.
And,
okay.
Where I'm from, the elders took care of financial stuff.
Yeah.
And my dad would talk about some of the things that they tried to intervene in and we all went wrong. Of course, I didn't know anything that they did right. But, when I suffered in a certain situation when I was younger, I left the my home congregation and went to another one that's in county on that far away. And then I come asking why. And that bothers me even today to think about that. But the road goes both ways, I could have went to them.
Mm-hmm.
But I still don't know that they would have any spiritual answers for them in the first place.
And that's unfortunate, that you had that experience.
Yes.
And I'm sorry to cut you off if you have.
I think that's the case now. And an elder that may see someone struggling, I think they'd have a hard time coming up talking to them spiritually, in a spiritual sense.
You think they would?
I think they would.
Generally speaking? Okay. Well, then that's an issue. And that, go ahead, I'm sorry, you cut me off.
Self-reliant, I guess.
Okay.
And kind of taught in the culture to begin with. But you still have to have a personal relationship to even be able to think a little bit.
Okay.
So,
all right. I think, what you just described is more common than we care to admit. I'll say it that way. It's much more common than we care to admit. And it all goes back to how we, and I use the term we, loosely, whoever we is, have strayed away from the primary function of the church leader. And we've forgotten that we are primarily a spiritual group of people. We are bound together spiritually. That's what connects us and unifies us, is spiritual things, the love of God. Okay? And we have forgotten that, and we've treated it over the course of time. It didn't happen overnight. It happened starting at the turn of the century. I'm not going to get the history of it, but somewhere around, but a little bit before World War I, we started to think of the church, and I'm referring to the Church of Christ, as a non-profit organization. And that's essentially how it was run, as a non-profit organization. And it just started slowly, a little bit at a time, until it got to the point where we have someone like you who sits here with a bad experience of the elders not showing any appreciation or sensitivity to their spiritual pain or suffering or need, as opposed, relative to what they did show it, their attention to was the financial matters, running the church as a nonprofit organization. And that's been the de-evolution of or the problem of it. That's why I'm focusing so much on it. Now, let me point out two things with that. go ahead. Anyone else? Anyone else have a question or comment? Go ahead.
Well, I've had something that that happened with my sister and her home congregation in Alabama, in Florence, that has bothered me, and I questioned it at the time. She was talking about what she was going to wear to church the next day. And she pointed to some dress that she had, said she couldn't wear that because it was too short. And I questioned that, and she said, well, the elders have told me that it is too short and that I should not be wearing it.
Yeah.
And I thought at the time, the elder's supposed to be doing that. Yeah. The elder's supposed to be telling her that that dress is too short to wear.
Uh-huh.
And I said something, but I don't remember exactly what it was that I said to her, but she commented that she was perfectly all right with being told that.
Yeah.
That it did not bother her at all that the elder said it's too short, so therefore she was not going to wear it.
Uh-huh.
But then later on, we were in Manhattan, Kansas. I was teaching on the Joy Bus. And one of the elders came to me and commented that the dress that I had worn that particular Sunday was too short and asked me not to wear it again. So here's two situations where something very, to me, almost minute, was being dictated by the elders. And yet, at the same time, I can see that that falls into the spiritual realm of our Christianity.
Okay.
It's pretty, it's relatively small.
Yeah.
But I think it is how we dress says something about the Christian model
that
we have.
Yeah, let me speak to that, because and we'll stop here and we'll pick this up next week. But let me give you one other illustration, and then I want to speak to what you just said. The church I came from, we had we did a pretty good job. They did do a pretty good job of getting the teenage boys opportunities, all age really, but opportunities to participate in leading worship, and so they'll. Like we do, ask them to read scriptures, prayers, you know, the same as we do. We do a good job of it too. I don't mean to differentiate that. But one young man that was there, a teenage boy, 14, somewhere around there, ninth grade, wore, you know, kids, their shirts aren't, you know, kids don't wear plain shirts. Teenage kids, I mean, they're going to make a statement, you know, with their clothes. And he had on an American Eagle, Aeropostale, whatever, fancy, nice, expensive-looking shirt. And it was deemed inappropriate. It didn't have inappropriate offensive language or anything immoral on it. It was a loud shirt. It was very, look at me, I have a cool shirt on kind of shirt. And he got up and read scripture, did a prayer, whatever he did. Two of the elders went to his home that week to confront him about it and tell him that he's being inappropriate and setting a bad example. So they told him. Being inappropriate, setting a bad example. You ought not to dress like that anymore. And until he determines that he's going to change his clothes and wear more appropriate clothing to church, which would include not wearing shorts, he will not be allowed to participate in worship any woman. Okay? Well, the rub is that we had two kids, two teenage boys, a couple years older than him that had their license, and they were going off. They were losing their faith. No, they had lost their faith. They were working on losing their souls. They were doing things that they should not have been doing. I'm talking about drinking, premarital sex. They were in the process of losing their souls. And the parents were either blind to it or had just thrown up their hands and didn't know what to do anymore. Not one word has ever been said to those two boys. Those two boys are now gone. They're gone. And I keep up with them on Facebook. Those kids, I'm going to start crying and saying, those kids are gone. They're gone. And the elders never said one word to them. Their souls are gone. But The other kid, his soul is now gone too, because he refuses to go to church. We could all tell stories like that if you've gone to the Church of Christ for any length of time. And it's not to pick on us. It's common.
But it's not just Church of Christ. I mean,
that's what I meant to say. That's not just to pick on us. It's that attitude has been prevalent. And that's kind of what led to George's experience and others. Go ahead.
Yes. Usually by the time stuff like this is noticed and someone's struggling, they basically almost made up their mind, if not already made up their mind, they're just coming to the empty shell.
Yeah.
But the point with the dress, the point with the shirt, the point of not going and talking to these kids that were well on their way to losing their souls. It's reacting instead of preemptive.
Yeah.
And the kid should have been a little more humble about what he was wearing.
Yeah.
The girl, she's young, she's flirting. Might be a good-looking girl, she may not be. You know, it's all opinion of the guy looking at her. I mean, my opinion of what makes a girl look good in a sexual way is another guy.
He's
used to it, doesn't care. It's not what his deal is. Well, the girl needs to be taught. You know, this is what this leads to. The kids that were on their way to losing their souls, they hadn't been taught. I mean, a good friend of mine, his wife, the daughter of a preacher, not in the Church of Christ, but obviously didn't understand that premarital sex was anything wrong with premarital sex. I mean, how could you not know that? I guess the church did not know that, but it's not taught.
Yeah.
And who wants to bring it up? Most of us kids. You don't want to start thinking about that too early.
Yeah.
If they don't think about it, they're already talking about it with most of friends at school. So, I don't know. I don't have any answers. All I know is that you react to you can't wear that anymore.
Yeah.
All right. It's not dealing with their spiritual growth, it's not dealing with what's going on in my mind, it's reacting to what they've already done.
Yeah.
So, I guess the deal is trying to figure out how to teach these things without stepping on toes.
It takes a while. So, and I think, let me wrap up here because we're out of time, but we're going to get into this with more depth. But the whole idea of, for some of us, we think, well, yeah, that is an elder's job. And that goes back to the disunity part. What is an elder's responsibility? What is not? So for some of us, we would think, yeah, well, an elder should. If he sees something that he deems inappropriate, he should go speak to the young lady. You know, because you don't want to be sexually suggestive or be a stumbling block to somebody. You want to be appropriate. So there's the idea. And then the other person is thinking on the other side, well, hold on a second. What someone wears, what I wear, is none of your business. That's my clothes, you know? So why are you telling me what to wear? Here's I'm not going to say middle ground. Here's my opinion of what the biblical ground is, which is kind of in the middle. It's the reason the elder would go to the person, because they care about their soul. So if they perceive that a young lady is having a spiritual issue that leads to her dressing inappropriately or suggestively or immodestly, then that's what they need to work on. They don't just need to go and say, don't wear that. They need to go and say, hey, how are you doing? What's going on with you? Has anything happened, like sexual abuse, that would lead you to not value your body enough to cover it? Those type of things. It's all in what their concern and their focus is on. If their concern is just keeping up with appearances, then all they're going to say is, cover yourself. If their concern is this girl's soul and her relationship with her Savior, then they're going to say, how are you doing? What's going on? Let's sit down and talk. But in order for them to be able to say that and do it with any effectiveness, they have got to have built the reputation and the credibility to do that. And let me just point one small thing out, and I hope you kind of see the connection here, connecting the dots. One of the things that our shepherds do is they stand at the back and at the front when we offer when I offer an invitation before Sunday morning. That's on purpose. It's planned and it's strategic so that we can start to develop the attitude and the idea that my shepherds are here for me. And they want me to come to them if they need anything, if I need anything. And they're here. And if I just want to slip out the back and go talk to them, they're here. Because they do care about my spiritual soul or my spiritual health and the welfare of my spiritual life. And so that's why they're there, is to go and to pray over you and to pray with you and to love on you, to cry with you, to hug on you, to help you physically if you have some physical something going on in your life that you need addressed so that you can be more spiritually healthy. Because it's rarely that something physical won't impact us in one way or another eventually spiritually or vice versa. It's rare. The two always correlate back and forth and impact one another back and forth. So that having been said, let's wrap it up. We got 5 minutes left and we'll get out of our time. But we're going to dig more into some of this next week. Good discussions though.